And welcome to Thursday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. He is Paul Dottino. I'm Lance Meadow with you for the next 60 minutes. 201-939-4513. That is the telephone number. Hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. We'll get to your phone calls. We'll get to your tweets. We're going to be joined by a very special guest today, the special teams coach at Southern Oregon University, who was with Aldrich Rosas when he was there and helped win a national championship in 2014. So we're going to get some little tidbits on Rosas' game, what stood out to the coaching staff when they had him at Southern Oregon, and what perhaps he could bring to the New York Giants, as he is the only current kicker on the roster. So stay tuned for that. Before, though, we get to the coach, who is Nathan Chin, let's talk about OTAs. Week 2, Paul, well underway. Dan Salamone on Giants.com. You can check that out. Put together some...
The great Dan Salamone.
Yes, the great Dan Salamone. Excuse me. I should
you
have
know,
prefaced
we have
it
actually
that
had yeah. Dan Salamone fans contact me on Twitter. I don't know about you.
Is that
but,
true? Wow.
And they want to know when they can get voice and face of Dan Salamone on the program, to which I, of course, explained to them that would ruin our salary cap.
Correct, yes. I don't know if we have the capacity to afford that. Though I will say this, if you go back and back into the archives, Dan Salamone did make an appearance on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Now, this was pre-camera days. Now, he's shaking his head because he's in the vicinity here, so
yes.
He's confirmed my report. But
yes.
I can confirm Dan Salamone was on a Big Blue Kickoff Live. If you could find it online, good luck to you. We will certainly gladly take whatever suggestions you have. But in all seriousness, he did put up a practice report from yesterday as OTA Week 2 is well underway. Also gave a laundry list of some of the standouts, and let's look over that list. The three players that Dan highlighted, Eli Manning, Sterling Shepard, and B.J. Goodson. And Goodson's been a player that we've talked about a lot, Paul, a guy that probably has one of the biggest opportunities more so than anybody else coming into 2017.
Well, you know, for him, it's simply a matter of being more comfortable with the playbook and then at least getting out there on the field and trying to execute all the things that they want him to do. Now, it's true, they're not hitting. I mean, there's no pads and there's no hitting. So there's only a limited amount of things that he's able to show the coaching staff. But here's what he can do. He can go out there and he can call signals. He can go out there and he can align players in the right formation. When he sees adjustments and audibles being made, he can then make those appropriate adjustments. Now, he can't show his physicality. He can't show his speed, okay? And quite frankly, he can't show his decision-making once a play begins because they're just not there to be had. But there are enough of things that he can do to lay the foundation in the coaches' minds that he is becoming more comfortable and more familiar with what it takes to be a two-down middle linebacker in the NFL.
Well, as Dan notes in his article, B.J. Goodson's been getting a lot of reps in the middle during the course of OTAs, and as you just said, getting more and more comfortable calling out the plays and aligning the defense. Now, I also mentioned Eli Manning and Sterling Shepard. When Shepard recently spoke to the media, one of the things he said he's going to work on entering this season, Paul, is yak yardage. Wants to get more yardage after the catch, and what's at least been highlighted in the first few days of Week 2 here is that Manning and Shepard are continuing to build a rapport, and, you know, it gets overlooked, I think, in an offseason when Brandon Marshall joined forces with the Giants, but Shepard, remember, is coming off a very impressive rookie campaign. For him to be so good on third down, in my opinion, Paul, for a rookie, I think that's what jumps out to me from his performance last season.
I would agree with you. And remember, the kinds of routes that Sterling Shepard usually ran for the Giants were not ones that lent themselves to yak yardage.
Yeah.
So it's not necessarily something that he could not do. It was something that he was probably not in a position to do an awful lot. Because if you're just trying to move the sticks, you're running an out route, you're running a curl, a comeback. You're not running the kinds of routes, at least on a regular basis, that's going to get you vertical and that's going to get you running away from guys downfield to get you yak yardage. He was much more concerned with just getting past the sticks. So, you know, yeah, it's admirable that he wants to do some more of that. I guess all I'm saying is be careful. Don't think that that was a negative in his game. It's just maybe a new dynamic that they're looking to add.
201-939-4513 is the telephone number. Hashtag Giants Chat. We're going to get to your phone calls. We're going to get to your tweets in a little bit as we continue to preview OTA's Week 2. But as we said off the top of the show, we are now joined by a very special guest here on Giants.com, and that is Nathan Chin, Southern Oregon University football assistant head coach, receivers coach. Now, he was the special teams coordinator when Aldrich Rosas, the current Giants kicker, was on the team before he left to go undrafted with the Tennessee Titans, and he's kind enough to give us a few few minutes here on Giants.com. Coach Lance Metal, Paul Dottino with you here. Big Blue Kickoff Live. Appreciate the time. How's everything?
Good, sir. How are you doing today, Lance?
Doing very well, Coach. And I'm curious, how much have you been following Aldrick Rosas' path since he left Southern Oregon? And now it looks like he has a great opportunity here with the New York Giants.
You know, just it seems like you see him popping up here and there. You know when he left, you know, after our national championship year, after he got hurt, kind of there was some distance there. But then, you know, since he entered the draft that year, and it's been exciting to see him, you know, grow into where he's gotten his opportunities, because he definitely has a big leg.
Coach, what impressed you the most about him? Was it the fact that he was able to come back from a serious knee injury? Was it the fact that he just has a great work ethic? Was it his mentality? Obviously, as you say, he's got a cannon of a leg. We've seen that here already.
Yeah, he just has an unbelievable work ethic. And it's, you know, when you're at the small college, you get a kid with that kind of caliber, you know, and I've never heard the ball being thumped like that before when he kicks it. You know, he just has some unbelievable power, and being 6'3", 230 pounds, and him being a kicker who looks like a linebacker, you know, his physical presence, you know, we feel like we lost, when we lost him, we lost an intimidation factor, you know, against other teams just when he was out there kicking the ball.
Now, why was that in particular, Coach? Was it because of the strength of the leg, what other teams had to deal with? Was it his accuracy? What do you think brought out that intimidation factor?
You know, I really think it was just his presence and his leg strength. You know, in warm-ups, he'd be kicking 60 to 70-yard field goals off of the ground. And then, you know, to be able to understand that you're never going to get a kickoff return against him, because he's going to kick it out of the back of the end zone. I think that was just – you could definitely tell the difference from the year we had him to the years we haven't had him, you know.
Coach, I looked at some of the stats when he was there. You guys had him for 2 years, correct? Am I right in that?
Yes, sir, that is correct.
Well, when I looked at the numbers, 25 of 32 field goals, and you talked about his touchback ability. I think it was well over two-thirds of his kickoffs were touchbacks. So, not a lot of returns available for him, which is certainly going to bode well here in the NFL. But let me ask you this. Of the seven that he missed, and I know you probably don't have a photographic memory to know of all the ones that he missed, but was there a common theme? Because we know that protection can be part of it. We know the snap can be part of it. We know the hold can be part of it. And then the kicker can be part of why a kick is missed. Is there a common theme that he needs to be careful of, that he needs to polish up as he enters the NFL?
You know, I think since he's left us, you know, and that's the challenge as a small college is who's your kicking coach? You know, it's the wide receiver coach or the DB coach or something who's kind of a self-taught type of guy. And so, you know, since he's left, he's gotten a lot better, you know, from the times I've talked to him, just from tips and things that he's worked on since he's left. And so to compare, you know, sometimes he was an over-kicker, you know, and not trusting just he has a strong enough leg. He didn't need to overkick the football. But he was those are things that probably brought a little bit of his inconsistency, you know, and just, you know, that probably a little bit of a hold here and there, and that consistency of a hold. But once he got good ones from that standpoint, he was money, you know, and he was on the verge of breaking a, you know, we were on a scoring spree those couple years, and so I think he was up around 112, 110, you know, straight PATs, but we were averaging about 56 points a game those couple years, so he had lots of opportunities to kick extra points too.
I have seen that when he was on the practice squad with the Titans, he did go to Ryan Succop quite a bit, the Titans kicker, and learned quite a bit from him. So obviously, you know, that's been an advantage to him since he's, you know, become an NFL player. But I want to ask you one thing, Coach, and this really kind of blew me away, because I watched some of his videos on YouTube and on the internet, and 60-yarders, 70-yarders. I mean, you're right, cannon of a leg. But then when I looked at the stats, when he was on your club, he was 0-for-1 from 50-plus. Why not have him if he was such an intimidating factor with a great leg? Why wasn't he given the chance to kick more 50-yard field goals?
You know, it was really a philosophical thing of what we do offensively here, you know, and we're – we kind of live on the edge of the offensive world and don't really play by those necessary rules of kick and field goals. So, we're going for it on fourth down more often than not, and it's not necessarily the fact that we didn't trust Aldrick. You know, it's more of the fact that what we had on an offensive side. You know, we had Player of the Year in Austin Dodge, who threw for over 17,000 yards in his career. So, it was more of what we did offensively, not what we didn't think Aldrick could do.
That's why I asked the question. I'm glad you answered it, because you understand it didn't make a lot of sense, to be honest.
Yeah, it doesn't make a lot of sense, but that's who we are, and I think that's when Coach Howard came here from Florida, and he brought that mentality of an offense to Southern Oregon. It was kind of that Chip Kelly mentality from Oregon, that we're gonna live on the edge a little bit, and that
right.
tempo is gonna be able to take advantage of somebody who may not be paying attention, and we'll be able to get a fourth down, conversion on somebody because of that.
Right.
Well, it was certainly successful given the fact that you mentioned you averaged 50 to 60 points a game. So I don't think you're looking back and complaining with respect to that, coach, as we're joined
sure.
by
yes, sir.
Nathan Chin, Southern Oregon University football assistant head coach. He was the special teams coordinator when Aldrick Rosas, the current Giants kicker, was on the team and helped lead them to the 2014 national championship. And, coach, in that game, that's when he tears his ACL. So he winds up missing the entire 2015 season. And then he determines that he wants to enter the NFL draft, goes undrafted. How much of a discussion, considering he missed the entire 2015 season, and correct me if I'm wrong, coach, I believe he still had 2 years of eligibility left. How much of a conversation did you have about maybe there would have been a benefit to having him still play at the collegiate level to hone his skill set before he jumped to the NFL?
During that time, because he went back home and had his surgery, and there's little bits of conversation I had with him after that. And every time I've talked to him, one of my biggest things to him, and just like I would with any kid, is, I get it. You're going to chase the dream, and you're getting opportunities. Don't forget to to finish your degree. And that's absolutely. It probably would have helped him. And the benefit he actually got is he got he went and got some other kicking coach help. After he got healed up, and I think those things helped him kind of propel him into getting a shot now. So it's hard to. Of course, we would have liked to have him see finish and kind of hone in on his skills for a couple more years and those. But we're also rooting for him right now, too. Hoping he continues on this streak of, doing well out there right now.
Absolutely. Well, as you know, when you suffer a serious knee injury, no matter what position you play in, there's always question marks about can the player regroup and get back to that level of where they performed before the injury. I know he didn't ultimately return in 2016, but, how much progress do you think he made since suffering the knee injury in terms of getting that strength back? How much of a challenge was that?
Oh, I'm sure. It definitely was a challenge, but I know that, talking to him, that his strength, he felt stronger after it than he did before, just the work he put in to be able to get him to that point. So, that injury is one of those things, when you have a kid like that size, we had to make sure that he continued to play safety on kickoffs, in that game, we're up two or three scores in the championship game, and he decides he wants to go make a tackle on the sideline, and
wow.
and he just comes down, funny on the leg, and there it goes, So, even though it was a tough situation he had to go through, I think he definitely came out of it from a stronger standpoint.
Now, Coach, the Giants are listing him at 6'2", 195. Is that what he played at? And the reason I ask is because, as you said, and we've seen, he has a rather large frame for a kicker. And I don't know how big he was or how strong he was pre-injury. And did the workouts after the knee injury and the comeback that ensued have anything to do with his build or his muscular frame or his strength?
He's always been that, and I think the last time I talked to him, I think it was right after I heard that the Giants had signed him before he had reported. you know, I heard he was up around the 230 range, you know, and so I was like, wow, that is enormous. You're huge right now. But yeah, he's always had that frame. You know, he looks like a professional soccer player, you know, just 6'2", long, lean, you know, he has some mass to him, but he just has that leanness to him. And, you know, I think once he did, after the injury, I think he spent a lot of time in the weight room getting himself, you know, prepared for the next level.
I got one more for you. How'd you get him? Because with that kind of size and that kind of frame, some folks might have recruited him to be a running back or a tight end or maybe a safety, and you guys got him to be a kicker.
So he was, you know, he's from Orland, California, which is in the middle of nowhere between essentially the Oregon-California border in Sacramento, out in the middle of nowhere. And we, one of our coaches, Coach Stewart, he was working a little camp down in the Redding area. And he was sitting there, and he heard this kid kicking the ball, and he just heard a thump, thump. You know, and this little camp's out in the middle of the woods. And he looks over, and he sees him kick, and he goes, I'm gonna go sign this kid. And so, you know, he didn't have any looks. You know, it's just he was at one of those areas, one of those schools where he was, you know, he played a little bit of safety for him, but essentially because he was such a strong-legged kid, you know, that was his forte, is to go kick. And so, yeah, essentially after that, we got him the next year after camp, and he just didn't get much. He didn't really get any looks outside of us, you know, just probably based on location.
Wow.
That's a very, very interesting story in terms of how he wound up at Southern Oregon. Now, when he was at Southern Oregon, we threw out his numbers earlier, Coach, and when you play for the New York Giants, the one thing you always have to anticipate is when you're going to be at MetLife Stadium, the winds are going to play a factor. The weather could very well play a factor. So, I mean, I know for people who may not be up on where Southern Oregon is in the Frontier Conference, it's an NIAI school, but can you talk about what type of weather you had to deal with during Aldrich Rosas's tenure and, you know, how that may have played a role in terms of his kicking numbers?
So that's probably one. That's, you know, you say that, you know, two-thirds of them were touchbacks. You know, the other third was probably because we were playing in Montana, you know, and when you play at the NAI, you know, it's an open stadium, so the wind just howls through, you know. So, you know, kicking into the wind, those type of things, you know, even in that 2014 season, you know, he missed a field goal because we played in an absolute snowstorm. It was about minus 15 degrees out. The snow was still coming down. You could hardly see the field. It was a skating rink out there. And so he's kicked in just about anything that you can think of from a weather standpoint, just based on our conference.
Wow. Final question for me, Coach. Do you think that had he not gotten the knee injury, based on what you've told us about his impressive kicking ability, did you know of any whispers or calls or scouts who had shown interest in him? And had he stayed and continued to do what he did without the injury, would he have been a draft pick? My guess is probably yes, even though a lot of kickers don't get drafted every year. It sounds like, you know, people must have heard about this cannon leg from somewhere.
Yes, I think especially if you go, you know, you make a run in the playoffs and you get to play on ESPN at the NAI level, well, shoot, they all of a sudden they see this kicker and he's booming the football. So he kind of is getting known out there a little bit. And the next year we go back to the national championship in 2015, and he would have got another year of recognition that way of doing the same thing he'd been doing the 2 years prior. To say he would have been a draft pick, obviously that's up to the bigwigs and the teams, you know, of figuring out if he is that kind of guy. But, you know, it definitely would have probably helped up his stock with, obviously, without an injury, with another 2 years of experience under his belt. You know, his stock would have definitely probably been a little bit higher because of that. But, you know, it was a choice he made just based on the situation that he was in. And obviously, you know, it's working out for him. Hopefully it really works out this year for him.
Well, he has a golden opportunity here with the New York Giants. Hey, Coach, before we let you go, he clearly was competing with a veteran when he was with the Tennessee Titans. The Giants, as I mentioned, he's the only one on the roster, but hypothetically, if they were to bring in an established vet as they get closer to training camp, you know, you mentioned he has an intimidation factor. What jumps out to you, though, about his competitive fire if he has to go up against somebody as he makes his way to the 53-man roster? How much of a competitor is he, and how much does he embrace that?
Oh, he's an extreme competitor. You know, that's the, you know, we didn't have much to compete against him from a position standpoint, but he competed against himself every single day, you know, and I think that's one thing that drove him to always get better at what he was doing, is he was always working on his craft and trying to get better at what he was doing. And, you know, when you talk about him in games, you know, he wanted to make sure that he was putting the ball back of the end zone, so you know they didn't have a chance because of that, just that competitive nature that he had. So I think, you know, regardless of the situation, if it's him and he has himself and he's competing against himself, he's going to work and try to be the best he can be, you know, because it's an opportunity for him. If they bring in a vet, he'll compete, and he'll you know, just like he did with the Titans, he'll search out for some extra help, you know, to help him, you know, kind of propel himself into this career. So he's one of those quiet spoken, you know, but highly competitive and unbelievable kid, you know, one of those high character, just unbelievable people. And, you know, obviously it's a great one to be representing Southern Oregon out there for us.
Nathan Chin, Southern Oregon University football assistant head coach, receivers coach, was the special teams coordinator when Aldrich Rosas played there. Coach, greatly appreciate the time and the insight. Thanks so much for joining us here.
Thank you, Coach.
Yep, thank you guys. Appreciate it. Good luck, Aldrich.
All right, Nathan Chin weighing in on Aldrich Rosas and some nice backstory in terms of how he wound up there, as well as the strength of his leg. It'll be interesting to watch him come training camp.
Clearly the most thorough information that anybody has gotten on Rosas to this point here in the New York area, and to me it's all positive. I feel even better about this kid, not just from seeing him, but after talking to his college position coach. So we move on, and we figure out, you know, how he's going to do, and it's all set there for him, as you say. It's sitting on the table. All he's got to do is grab it, because the Giants have had so much success with young kickers in recent years.
In developing them. Yeah.
Boswell, McManus, you know, and it goes back even 15, 20 years. I can name those guys,
but those
too,
are
but
the two more recent ones who have now gone on to have starting jobs.
So there's no reason to believe that they can't mold him into what they need.
But as we've talked about this prior, the preseason is going to make or break any game.
Sure it is.
You're going to have to wait and see game situation. Not necessarily the game on the line, but just the game situation. I mean, you could kick a million different field goals during practice with the music on, and they go through the motions, but completely different than getting out there on a football field at a preseason game. So that's when you really see what Rosas is made of. 201-939-4513. That is the telephone number. Hashtag Giants Chat. We're going to open up the phone lines here for the remainder of the program. Preview OTA week 2 and get into whatever other storylines you want to delve into. Mike is in Boston. He gets us going. Mike, what's happening?
Hey, how are you? Thank you for taking my call.
Thanks. Hi. For making the call, Mike. So what do you have for us?
Oh, hey, so I wanted to talk a little bit about the kickers, you know, both Brad Wing and also Aldrich Rosas, you know, especially if they're listening to that. I also wanted to just, if I could, just give my little take on the offensive line. You know, but with the two kickers that we have on the team, you know, I'm kind of excited to see what Aldrich Rosas is going to be able to do, you know, in the next couple of weeks, and hopefully, you know, if he makes a team, you know, in the regular season. I want to get your opinion, though, and it might be a better question for Jeff Eagles, but with regards to Brad Wing, he's probably the one player on the team, and maybe my, you know, maybe my view on it is wrong, you know, but I want to get some other opinions. I've never been thrilled with him since he came on the roster as far as the depth of how far he's able to kick the ball. And I get it, there's a lot of elements, you know, as far as the hang time and all that, you know. And I know last year he was referred to as a weapon. There was a few weeks where he was able to pin it, you know, within, you know, 5 yards of the goal line, but of the end zone, I should say. But, you know, I just feel like I've never seen him pound that ball farther than, you know, let's say 40 yards or so, and I feel like we tend to get lousy field position, especially that Green Bay game. I was losing my mind. You know, obviously there were a lot of things that were wrong on special teams, but you know, it just seemed like we were turning the ball over practically midfield each time, and they'd run it to the 50 and, you know, give the ball to Rodgers. You know, I wanted to get some opinions on that. You know, is there something that I'm missing about this player that makes him, you know, so special that you hear, you know, the accolade, you know, that he's, you know, referred to as such a good player?
Well, Brad Wing in his 3 years in the NFL has had longs of 74 with the Steelers in 14, 64 with the Giants in 15, and 63 with the Giants in 16.
Okay.
That's not terrible. I would say this, though. I think there are times when you or I would sit there, and I understand because you probably come from the Sean Landetta, Dave Jennings era, all right? And mm-hmm. I go back before that. I go back to Ernie Coy and Tom Blanchard, okay? Guys you probably don't even know, and that's okay. But the point is, he's not a big bopper, okay? He's not a guy who's going to hit that home run ball if you're backed up at your own 20, and he's going to sky a big 65, 70-yard bomb that's got great hang time that's going to change the entire position of the field. We used to talk about Dave Jennings all the time when he was the Giants' offense. You remember those days? So, you know, that's not what Brad Wing is. What Brad Wing is a guy who's going to get the appropriate hang time when you need it. He's going to get the kick out of bounds when you need it. He's going to get that kick almost like a quarterback when he's passing the ball to a certain area. He's got the accuracy. And of course,
I guess what it is.
And
accuracy.
Of course, he's got that tremendous rugby kick.
Yeah.
You know, the boomerang and all that other stuff that he does to make the ball go funky and bounce backwards and bounce straight up. He's got so many tricks. He's like Houdini with the ball. And trust me, when Fegels is in, I want you to call and ask the very same question, because Jeff will tell you that Wing has such a magic kit of different kicks. I didn't know this until I sat down with him one day. I said, Brad, I didn't know that there were like more than two or three kicks that a punter could have. He's like, are you kidding me? He's got like six of them.
Yeah.
They're all different. That's what makes him special. And he does all of them very, very well, except the big, high-arcing grand slam bomb. That's what you want. That's about the only thing he doesn't really have in his toolbox. But, to be fair, you won't be calling for that very often. The way the league is played nowadays, you want all those other tools in the toolkit, because it's those kicks that are much more important 90% of the time than just kicking the bomb.
And speaking of the variety of kicks.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to add that what I think would be extremely beneficial for you to watch is Jeff actually did a feature with Brad Wing on last year's training camp show. I don't know if that's still up on Giants.com, but if you search for that, Brad went through all of his various kicks that you just laid out, Paul. So that may be something just to take a glance at, Mike. But, I mean, I think Jeff could provide a little bit more insight, but I would agree with what Paul said. And, you know, also it's the league where now there's not a great deal of returns. So what you want to do is it's a lot about accuracy and placement as opposed to power. I think that facet of the game. So, you know, Wing falls in line with that new movement, how the game has evolved in that degree. And you brought up the Packers game. I mean, I would say that was a rough performance for the entire special teams. You remember, that was the game where Bobby Rainey, you know.
Correct. Even Paul Perkins with the fumble.
Exactly.
Exactly.
So, and I'm not saying that Wing played his best game, but I think there were a combination of factors in that contest. It wasn't just one individual.
And also, I would add one more thing. For all the years that Jeff Fegel played in the league, it wasn't until the end when he finally hit the magic number of having a net 40 yards per kick. And that was such a magic number for Jeff. He wore that like a tattoo on his forehead as a source of pride that he was actually finally able to get a net of 40 yards a punt. Well, last year, Brad Wing's net was 40.9. And it took Jeff over 20 years to get there. So,
you know, I'm actually happy hearing all this, too, and I'm going to go back and look at those videos. That's actually the answer I was looking, you know, the points that you brought out are really good ones. And like you said, you know, I'm thinking of it just in terms of a few things, you know, the home time, you know, the positioning, you know. But I do realize from listening to you guys that there's a lot more nuances, so that's pretty neat. You know, that was very
good
insightful.
Good stuff. Yeah. You got it, Mike.
Just real quick, if I could mention, you know, every day it seems like I hear about the offensive line, and I don't want to beat a dead horse. You know, everyone saw what went on. You know, we kind of grumbled a little bit with what we struggled with. But, you know, I tend to have a little bit more of a positive outlook on the offensive line that we have now going into next year. I just want to give my take on it for what it's worth. I respect everyone else's opinion, you know, with Eric Flowers and all that. But, I mean, you know, part of the season, Justin Pugh was injured, so that affected us at the guard position. This year, you know, if you just look at the two, the right and left tackle position, even if we played exactly the same, if Eric Flowers, because we saw his floor last year, we haven't seen his ceiling yet, but even if he plays this year the exact same way, which is probably, you know, worst case scenario, and you know, whether it's Bobby Hart at the right tackle, you know, when you look at all the other improvements on the offense, we're essentially upgrading, you know, Will Tye with, you know, Evan Ingram. We have, who's the other tight end?
Jarrell Adams is another tight end.
Jarrell Adams.
Yeah.
We'll get to see him.
Ellison.
We have Brandon Marshall, who's a tall receiver. We have Shane Vereen in the backfield, who's healthy now, and he's got a backup in Sean Drone. We have Paul Perkins, who we really didn't play that much last year because he was still a rookie, and he really only broke out towards the end of the season. We're going to see a lot more of him this year, you know.
You're forgetting Richburg and his injured hand last year, too.
I was going to get to the offensive line because on the offensive line, you know, out of the five positions, 60% of them I'd say I'm very comfortable with, in the sense you have Justin Pugh healthy now. Weston Richburg, you know, had the injured ligaments in his hand. We're going to have him healthy. On the right guard position, we have a lot of competition. And then, so even if Eric Flowers and Bobby Hart played exactly the same as last year, you have improvements in those areas. And then look at Eric Flowers. I'm actually very impressed to hear all that he's going through. It sounds like the guy's training like Rocky Balboa this year. You know, he didn't even go home, you know, and I'm anxious to see what he's going to put out. I don't know what his ceiling is going to be this year. I don't expect a Joe Thomas.
I'm glad somebody's been listening to me for the last 3.5 months. Thank you.
But I don't see another player that we could have gotten in the free agency or in the draft that would have been better than Eric Flowers. And, you know, it's interesting because they talk about him slimming down. He was probably last year one of, if not the strongest players on the team. So I don't mind seeing him slim down, you know, have a little bit more athleticism. I'm kind of anxious to see. Now, the only thing I would say is we don't have depth at the left tackle position, but I would say we have a lot of competition at that position because this kid is competing with himself. We hear every day in the media on this station, you know, the callers, everyone is putting down Eric Flowers. No one believes this kid. I'm rooting for him at this point. Last year I was disappointed with him. I'm actually rooting for him, you know, so I just wanted to give my 2 cents. And I respect, you know, everyone else's, you know, the other callers too. I understand where they're coming from.
Well, appreciate the phone call, Mike.
Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot.
Sure.
You know, I want to add one item about a transaction that came up this morning, and it goes off the topic of the offensive line. But the Giants signed a wide receiver out of Akron, which is where Dominic Hickson played before he was drafted by the Broncos and then landed with the Giants. Jerome Lane, 6'2", 226 pounds. Now, why do I bring this up? Because on the show yesterday, we had a number of people ask about the wide receiver depth chart. We also had that last week on the show. And people talking about, well, what's going on with King? What's going on with Lewis? Are there any other wide receivers in the mix? People are asking a lot about that. And we also had people ask about Kevin Snead because he ran the 4.22. Well, here, Jerome Lane, very interesting prospect the Giants just signed today. A 4.60 at the combine. He's big. He's strong. He's got hands. Played some outside linebacker and safety in college. Understanding he is a terrific special teams player, and may I say that 3 times? He's a terrific special teams player.
That would be important. Yeah.
He's a terrific special teams player. He's a terrific special teams player.
I think we got the point.
When you're competing for those last spots on the wide receiver depth chart, special teams may very well get you the ticket onto the 53. So when I saw this signing this morning and the fact that he has played some defense, so we know he hits and he tackles and he's big and he's strong at 6'2", 225. I'm saying to myself, okay, that better be a real big red light of an alert to the other guys battling for the back of that wide receiver depth chart, because this is a guy who probably is going to beat any of those guys on special teams. Now, if he can even come close to them as a wide receiver, that's going to be one heck of a fight.
I'm surprised you left out the best part of his story. Thought you were going to go with the dad storyline.
The dad story is not relevant to me.
I understand that, but I thought you'd at least throw in that little nugget. Because I mean, think most people would remember that.
And we've talked about Rudolph, too, from Florida State.
Florida State, yeah.
You know, I mean, this is another guy who's in that mix. And so, anyway.
Well, that plays into the competition theme that we've been talking about. The competition, to me, is across the board. It's not just one position.
It's going to be really fun watching training camp. Yeah. Every snap, I'm just going to salivate at this. It's going to be so much fun.
Before we get to our next phone call, I just want to
talk about his dad. Go ahead. Talk about his dad.
Jerome, that famous call by Bob Raftery in terms of the dunk. Send in
Bill
Jerome. Because Bill Raftery, excuse me, I got Jerome on my
Don't
mind.
Ever say Bob.
I'm
He's
sorry.
A Hall of Famer,
I know,
for
I know.
God's sakes.
Slip of the tongue.
Coach, love you, Raf.
But, yes, he was. He played for Pitt, played basketball for Pitt, and had that notable dunk. You can check it out on YouTube. It's the very famous call. So now that
great story,
that,
but has nothing to do with him
correct.
Making the 50.
Well, I did want to get back to something related to the Giants. Mike was talking about the offensive line, and he mentioned that he did not think that even if the Giants drafted somebody, they would put themselves in a better position than having Ereck Flowers. And what I wanted to add to that is people forget all but one of the top four offensive linemen that were drafted this year is younger than Ereck Flowers. They're all the same age or older than Ereck Flowers.
Correct.
Ereck Flowers is 23. Garrett Bowles is 25 years old. So you're going to either bring in a guy that is higher up in age, or you're going to bring in a guy that is starting from square one here in terms of trying to even get to the stage of Ereck Flowers and gaining the experience and gaining the rhythm of the offensive line. So when you take all that consideration in, I just, once again, I would agree with what Mike's sentiment was. When you evaluate the free agency market, you evaluate the draft, to say that there would have been a better option than seeing what Ereck Flowers does and what they're hoping is a key third year, I think is a bit of a stretch. And that's something that is an important part of the conversation. So I just wanted to throw out that nugget because I think people tend to forget he had a lot of older offensive linemen in this year's draft. With that being said.
And by the way, Ryan Clady, still out there on the street.
Oh, and coming off an injury, too.
And that's my point. I mean, for all the activity involving offensive linemen, Ryan Clady's still out there for a reason.
201-939-4513. Let's head back to the lines. We got Joel in New Jersey. Joel, what's happening?
Hey, what's up, guys?
Hi.
Doing well, Joel. What do you got?
The last caller pretty much stole my thunder, but he was on the same theme as I am on. We got to start getting positivity about our offensive line, man. I want to put a challenge out to all the listeners, everybody on Twitter. We've listened to our GM. We listened to our head coach. We listened to Paul talk how much these guys have really, you know, taken the steps to improve this year. Let's trust their eyes. These guys look at them all the time. So let's just chill for the rest of this offseason. We got like less than 100 days until the regular season starts. You know, let's just wait and see, because if they're saying some positive things and they look at players all the time, they have to know what they're talking about.
You know what? Here's the one thing that I have to say, the little asterisk next to this. All the preparation in the world doesn't always 100% of the time produce results. I'm simply telling you that from what I've seen, I believe that they will be better. And I've said that for months. The guys here at the facility have said it. I know there's a lot of optimism. That doesn't mean it's automatically going to happen. You and I both understand that. But I will tell you, the steps have been taken to watch this offensive line improve. That's a fact. I've seen it. I know it. I believe it. Now it's up to them to just put it out on the field.
So let me ask you a question, Paul.
Yeah.
What have Bobby Hart, what has Flowers done that you've seen that says, okay, I know they went to this particular program and they spoke, you know, they maybe worked with somebody outside of, you know, the organization, and they're working on some skills. What have you seen so far that makes you feel so confident?
Two things are very important about this. A, they have spent a lot more time in the weight room doing off-season training with their skills, not just weights, lifting weights for strength purposes, but also their skills, their hand-eye and their foot coordination, and all of the stuff that goes into the physical movements of what an offensive line has to do. They have spent a great deal more time of that than they ever have in their previous years in the NFL, because they're only third-year players. And their first 2 years, I did not see the commitment to the level that I'm seeing now. That's my first reason why. Second reason why, both of those guys, and I'm not giving out any top secret pieces of information here. Both of those guys have spent a tremendous amount of time not just doing those things, but being here with their fellow teammates, with the strength and conditioning coach, looking at the tapes, looking at the films, instead of going home and going to Florida and being away from the team for 2 months and then not coming back for X number of weeks at a time. Those guys said, we're going to stay here. We're going to work our butts off here. We tried it the other way. It didn't produce as many improvements and as many results as we wanted. So we're going to do it your way, Giants. You guys, you drafted us. You put faith in us. This is our third year. We got to show something. And so they have dedicated themselves to be here as much as they could during the offseason and then to do the kinds of techniques and skill-improving drills that are necessary to take the next step. Those things tell me that they're going to be better.
All right. So I just want, like I said, again, I just want to put a challenge out to everybody. Charlie, Maine, let's just wait and see until after game one, you can start saying, oh, I didn't like the way they performed or whatever. But at least for the rest of this offseason and this, you know, camps and everything like that, let's just – they're probably not going to make any more changes. They're probably not going to bring anybody else in.
Well,
yeah.
Joel,
this is what we have.
As far as your message to Charlie, two words for you. It's called wishful thinking. I appreciate the message, but good luck trying to convince him to stay quiet for the remainder of the offseason.
You know what it really comes down to, unfortunately? Until those guys actually get out on the field and show it, no one's going to believe it.
Yeah, because the one thing I will add and to what Paul just mentioned, Joel, is from an optics standpoint, everything looks good. In terms of what you're seeing, the level of dedication. But at the end of the day, it's all about applying the work that we're seeing now.
It's about production.
And then carrying it over to the field. So, I mean, we could sit here and we could talk about this looks great, that looks great. At the end of the day, you're still going to have to see it during the course of the games.
Look, I'm going to tell you something. Last offseason, and I said this on the show many times last year, Jay Bromley and Kerry Wynn were here like every single day. And every time I saw them, they were breaking their butts. And I talked to these guys, and they'd say, oh, yeah, this is it for us. We're gonna do it. And I was convinced that nobody was going to outwork those guys last offseason and that it would translate onto the field. Well, what happened? Jay Bromley barely got any snaps. He was in the back of the depth chart and barely got any snaps and didn't earn those snaps. Well, what happened with Kerry Wynn? Kerry Wynn got a very small portion of the snaps, and I think you would say that they were kind of ho-hum, you know?
Right.
It did not translate, but I know what I saw. I know their preparation was off the charts. In their cases, it did not necessarily produce the same production that was warranted based on their efforts. I'm believing that I will see the production equate to the preparation. We'll see.
All right. We'll see. All right. Well, listen, thanks for the call, guys. Keep up the good work. Okay?
Thank you.
Joel, thanks for making the call. Appreciate it. Dre is in Atlanta as we move along here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. What's happening, Dre?
Hey, Lance. What's going on, P-Dot?
Hi.
Doing well. What do you got for us?
Oh, well, a little bit of everything.
Okay.
A little smorgasbord. All right. That's what we like.
It seemed like every caller pretty much hitting my wheelhouse of what I wanted to touch on. But it seems like, one, we are so enamored of getting these names in or getting these free agents, and then as soon as they don't pan out, we're dogging them out, or we're dogging the team out. All I can say is if there was somebody out there that wanted to come to the Giants that was, you know, of quality, better than what we have in our roster, I'm sure the Giants would have done their due diligence and bring them in. Now, in reference to what you just said about Eric Flowers and Bobby Hart, I look at Flowers differently than I did Jay Bromley. Flowers was not horrible last year. When it came to run blocking, he did his thing. His issue was his technique with pass blocking, and we need to start looking at the fact that this is technique and pass blocking, not his overall game. He's young. He will do better. If he makes even just a stride this year, this season, in pass blocking, trust me, they'll think that he's the second coming of Jumbo Elliott. So you look at it like this. I'm saying, and that's the thing. It seems like we eat, us as fans eat so much crow because we come up there, we jump off the ledge, we recreate the narrative, to fit our own beliefs, and then when it doesn't pan out, we never really say, oh, I apologize. We just change the narrative to say, oh, I didn't say that. All I can say is give these players a chance, see what they got. 3 years. You see, we got rid of Andre Williams when he didn't pan out after 3 years. So what makes you think that we're going to hold on to him? The Coons, we kept on the Coons because we didn't have the funds at the time to get somebody else to come in and take that position, and we was injury ravaged. What can you do? We have to just look at the facts that's on the table and roll the dice and see what happens, because there's still no guarantee we're still going to have the best defense or the best offense this year. Appreciate my call. You guys continue to do what you do. Talk to you later.
Thanks for making the call.
And simply put, and he's got it right, and so's the call before him, the Giants were not going to find any guaranteed upgrades on the offensive line based on what was out there on the shelf. Their best bet turned out to be, and we told you this during February, I think, when it started to become apparent, and we certainly told you in March, it's not out there. You're better off with what you have and hope that you can improve from within than trying to go outside, because there's just not enough quality outside the building.
Yeah, you don't spend money just for the sake of spending money. You got to have quality production tied to that money. And I think there were a lot of teams that were not enamored with the draft class this year and decided we're in a situation where if we don't rely on the draft and we don't love our depth chart, we have to spend some money. But I don't think the Giants were in that position, considering some of the options they had, guys that they had drafted in previous years, and also some of the bargains that they wound up getting in free agency, like a guy like DJ Fluker. You know, they didn't have to break open the bank for Fluker, and Fluker is an experienced guy who has played multiple positions, and they're going to bring him in to compete with somebody else, like a John Jerry, and let the best man win. And sometimes that's a better option as opposed to going out on the market, Paul, and spending $30 to $40 million on an offensive lineman.
Let's be serious here, and this is not meant to be funny. The Giants did upgrade their offensive line, the depth of their offensive line.
The options to compete.
Fluker, Bisnovati, maybe even one of these free agent guys like Wheeler. You know, if we're to believe what we're told, all three of those guys are probably upgrades over the back of the depth chart from what the Giants had last year. And that in itself then provides more competition, and competition usually pushes your starters to get better. And if they're not better, well, then maybe those backups are better, and they steal the job. One way or the other, the result is you improve.
And a guy that I think we don't bring up much, but I think got a lot of experience long-term for his career, is Brett Jones last season.
Because sure.
Jones is a versatile guy that could play center and guard, and you know, as a result of the Justin Pugh injury that a caller brought up earlier, I mean, he started a lot of games. He had a lot of experience last year. You can't duplicate that in practice. So that, I think, is going to benefit him long-term. It wasn't too long ago. I mean, we were talking about whether or not he'd even make the roster. Would he stay healthy because he was on IR? Would
First
he make
year.
The transition from Canadian football to the NFL, where the distance between where the defensive and offensive linemen line up is different? And now you're seeing a guy that, you know, with very limited experience started and filled in, I thought, admirably until he got unfortunately banged up last season.
Yeah, I just think that it's like night and day, and even for the critics out there, the Giants starting offensive line, the starting five, if you will, just ask yourself, who are the backups for that line the last 3, 4, 5 years? Who were those backups? And who are the backups right now? And if you don't feel better about those guys, then you're not watching football, because they have greatly enhanced the back end of that depth chart.
With a mix of veterans and rookies, where most teams, they're relying on undrafted guys and rookies. You don't have the luxury in this league, because of the salary cap limitations, Paul, to have established veterans on your second tier.
No.
And that, I think, is in play for this season. So that's at least something promising. Let's head back to the lines. Brian is in North Carolina. Brian, welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live. What do you have for us?
Hey, Lance. Hey, I'm really glad to get through to you guys. I listen all the time. Thank you for what you do.
Thanks for tuning in, Paul.
Great. Thank you.
I've got a comment, and then I have a challenge for you two. Let me start with a comment. I noticed during the draft, I saw a trend in our draft in that we keep picking really smart guys. And I know we've talked about this before, but my alma mater is Wake Forest, and we did not get Ingram. We were trying to get Ingram, but he went to Ole Miss, but he was smart enough to get into Wake Forest. I'm a little biased there.
Okay.
Super smart guy, and I was really excited about that. And then when we picked Tomlinson, I was just thrilled, because this guy, this guy, I mean, he's got 2 degrees, graduated with honors. I mean, just a highly effective guy. Mm-hmm. And then Davis Webb is a smart guy, too.
Yep.
So our first three picks, you know, I couldn't really watch the draft after that, but I remember just beaming, just thinking, these guys, they could form a company and it would be successful. They could be the best finance firm in New York if they wanted to.
Well, remember, all very well-spoken guys.
Yeah, but remember, as Jerry Reese said, they're not interested in Dalvin Tomlinson figuring out taxes. They're interested
true.
In making tackles. So keep that in mind,
true.
Brian. Yeah.
I'm just saying that you know, effective people just do good jobs. You know, and these guys, they could be successful in whatever they do. I'm just psyched that this trend is continuing with the Giants, that we're picking these guys that are going to be successful in whatever they do. So I just want to praise our team for that.
Well, that trend seemed to be set the previous draft when they did well in 2016 and put a higher emphasis and premium on the quality of guy they took, guys who had
right.
good backgrounds, good football, high football acumen. That was a trend we saw. Remember what we were told. Jerry Reese said, clean players, guys who had no injuries in college and guys who had really good, clean profiles, good football guys. And, you know, 2016 was a good draft.
And I forget which year it was, but there was a recent year where I think everybody they drafted was a captain for their respective
team.
That
was 2 years
ago. Was that 2 years ago? So that's another thing that they obviously have been emphasizing, too.
Yeah, and that's great. And as long as I mentioned Wake Forest, I should throw a name out there. Next year, there's a guy named Cam Serenier that's going to be coming out. He's a tight end. You guys are probably aware of him. I'm sure our scouts have seen him. But he's going to be one of those impact players. He's not O.J. Howard or anything, but he's one of those guys, high integrity, and he can block and catch. So hopefully he'll be on our radar next year. And also, I was a little sad that we didn't get a hold of Brandon Chubb. He's with the Lions now, but he didn't respond well to the Rams system because for one reason or another. But that guy is I think eventually he's going to be an impact player. And I will have to just acknowledge my guy Nikita Whitlock. I wish he was still there, but
yep.
What is the word with Nikita, by the way? Is he just gone, or is he some way able to come back?
Well, Whitlock was hurt last season, so that obviously
right.
limited him. I mean, in terms of his potential down the road, I haven't heard much, Paul.
He's
have you
a
heard
free
anything?
Agent right
yeah,
now.
I mean, he's on the market, but I mean, even in terms of is he 100% healthy
I do not
and
know
willing
the answer
to contribute
to that.
To
I haven't
team.
Seen or heard
yeah,
from him in a long
so
time.
So that I can't really answer. I don't know. You know, I mean, he's the type of guy that if he's healthy, I mean, could he sign with a team as training camp starts? It's possible, but I haven't received any update in terms of his health.
I would caution you about your Wake Forest tight end. I'm looking him up right now in my database, and a 40 time of 4.78. For a 6'3", 250-pound tight end is going to be a little slow. That's going to hurt his draft stock significantly. And you know I don't always go by the measurements. That's not important to me. I like to believe what I see. I want to see what he does on tape. But unfortunately, the way things do go in the NFL, you put forth the 4.78 time as a tight end, that's not going to bode very well.
Right. He would be a steal, I think. He's definitely a late rounder or maybe even a undrafted free agent. But he's one of those guys that wins the 50-50 balls,
mm-hmm.
and he's just a sharp kid. And,
well, talk to
and
me
I'm
next
biased.
March.
I'm
I'll tell you what. I'm sure I will have a good look at him.
Yeah. Hey, I have a challenge for you guys. I don't want to hog up everybody's time, but this is one of those debates that happens amongst me and other North Carolina Giants fans. All right, here's the challenge. I'm not going to ask you guys what you would do, but I would challenge you guys to make an argument for trading Odell Beckham Jr. for Tyron Smith. And now, again, I wouldn't ask you what would you do. Would you do it or not? I'm asking, could you make an argument for that?
I mean, I can't see anyone making an argument at this point to get rid of their best offensive weapon, one of the best offensive weapons in the current NFL. I mean, I get that, you know, Tyron Smith's one of the top offensive linemen, but here's the other thing, and this is what I always say, and I get it, it's a hypothetical, Brian, but, you know, the other team's got to be willing to part ways with their best caliber offensive lineman. And what would make you think, with them bringing in Ezekiel Elliott and having a young quarterback, that they would even want to part ways with their starting left tackle, considering those guys don't grow on trees? So I don't see how either team would be in a position that they would want to part ways with any of those players.
Yeah, I would agree. It's just one of those things that you talk about in May.
Well, I guess so. See, Brian, I was hoping you were going to test our knowledge about Tim Duncan and Muggsy Bogues more so than any type of hypothetical NFL dress. I mean, you listed off all the NFL players. I figured you'd go with the positive for Wake Forest, and that's with some of the NBA guys. Chris Paul's another guy. But that's where I thought you were going to go. But, I mean, as far as this hypothetical, I don't see any value in getting rid of either of those players or either of those teams.
And may I add, it's hard for me to shake my head at that because, you know, I love the trenches. But at this point in time, how could you possibly, in retrospect, want to do something like that?
Well, and here's another thing.
Because you remember, in that draft, I wanted Zach Martin. Remember that.
Correct. But I mean, well, in terms of going back to Beckham's year, but here's
but I didn't know Beckham was going to turn out to be like this.
I don't think a lot of I don't even think people who covered LSU would figure that.
I don't think so.
But here's another thing that you have to look at it, and I'll play the game of hypothetical, Brian. Remember, Tyron Smith recently signed an extension, so he's got a long-term locked-up mega money deal. Odell Beckham's still on his rookie contract, so if you were to absorb that type of a deal just to play this hypothetical, you have to wonder how that impacts the salary cap and then how that would impact trying to then re-sign some of the other guys that are due for contracts. And the Cowboys would be gaining a guy that's still on a rookie deal with an option, whereas the Giants would be absorbing a long-term multi-year deal. So I think that's something that you'd have to weigh as well.
Gotcha. Yeah, and I didn't think that that would ever be a possibility. It's just one of those things that we talk about.
It's like the Ted Williams Joe DiMaggio talk at a bar. Not happening.
Yeah.
That's right.
Brian, appreciate the phone call.
Guys.
You got it. Thanks
so
much.
You.
How about D. Brown in Atlanta? D. Brown, what's happening?
Hey, what's going on, guys?
Hi.
Doing well. How's things with you?
Pretty good, pretty good. Paul, I definitely agree with your point with what you were saying about the line and just kind of it being better. I feel like we've added, you know, competition, quality competition, and I just feel like, you know, it's year three with the line and guest year. So with that being said, you know, it's a different learning curve. Flowers, you know, he got better in some regard last year. He got worse. I mean, I don't know. I saw a picture recently. I don't know if it was a real picture or not, but have you seen any change in his body? Was that real or was that some?
It does look to me, and again, it's hard to say because you're talking about, you know, in shirts and shorts compared to being on.
Right.
But
yeah.
I will say this, comparing his physique, you know, in the locker room last year compared to now, he does look a bit more sculpted. I know Bobby Hart does look like he's in better condition and better shape.
Right.
You know, he's matured. I hate to use the word baby fat about a young offensive lineman who weighs over 300 pounds because he could squash me. But
right.
I do think he has eliminated some of the baby fat.
All right, T-Brown. Anything
else? Did we lose him?
I don't know. I don't know if we lost him. But
I think his cell phone sounded like it was cutting
it was,
out.
It was coming in and out. We apologize if we lost you, D. Brown. Feel free
Please
to
call back again tomorrow.
On another program. How about Nick in the Meadowlands? Nick, what's happening?
Hello?
Nick, how we doing?
Hey, what's up, guys?
Hey,
Nick. Come on, Nick. What do you got?
All right. We've been talking about this offensive line for how long, you know?
And too long.
I don't want to hear no more negativity with Charlie's and guys like that. You know what I mean? We'll see when they put the pads on. I wish they could put them on tomorrow, you know?
Tell me about it.
I can't wait to see Wheeler and Biznavati. I call him Adam the Viking. That's my name for him. He looks like a Viking out there.
Okay.
I hope he plays like a Viking. And I can't wait to see Flowers and these guys because, you know what? I think Eric Flowers is going to come in with a big chip on his shoulder. And it sounds like he's been doing what we wanted him to do in the offseason. And I hope he puts it on the field. He just needs to get his feet a little quicker and work on his technique. He's strong as a freaking ox.
Yes, he is.
You know?
Yes, he is.
You know, so let's just give it some time, and we'll see when these guys start punching each other around and they put pads on, you know. Let's just be optimistic about it because, tell you what, if they play, like you've been saying, Paul, if they're just good, you know, I think we're in some good hands. You know what I mean? We're going to be looking at some games where we're excited. You know what I mean?
I agree.
I agree. Think you can't help to be optimistic about this team and excited. You know, everybody thinks that there's hype building up about this tight end. And the caller that called before, I like what he said, because you know what? You couldn't have hit the nail more center than how he hit it. These guys are smart, especially Tomlinson. That guy could have gone to Harvard. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I think what did he say? Finance he majored in and financial planning and everything. Mm-hmm. Smart guy. So I think going through the playbook and everything, putting his skill set together, I think we're going to have something special there. And the other guys too, you know, Ingram and everything. I think we're going to be all right, guys. You know what I mean? And Paul Perkins, I can't wait to see him. You know what I mean? That guy sees a crack, he's going to find it, you know?
Well, he's in line for a bigger role this season.
Get a little bit of weight on Orleans Darko and Gallman, like I was saying to you guys before. You know, get 10 pounds on them so maybe they can become the short yardage backs for us.
Well, I think as Darko stands right now, he could be a short yardage back. I mean, he's proved that even at his current weight. I don't know necessarily if he needs to add 10 pounds. I mean, he can run up the gut and carry defenders. We've seen that. It's just a matter of him getting the opportunity.
Getting injured either is the thing.
Of course,
you know, he's got to stay healthy. He's got a high motor, you know what I mean? He's eager to keep getting yards. And like we were talking before, Paul, like that Marcus Allen keeping your legs moving until the play is the whistle's blowing. You
I
know,
like
that's,
the
that's
style of Darkwa. I just don't know if he's got the body to be able to handle that kind of style. That's my worry. And it's easy to say we're going to add 10 pounds to the guy, but if you add 10 pounds to him, who knows if he can physically hold up?
How effective is the
player? How effective is he
going to
be? I don't know. It's not that easy. Maybe he's better off being where he is. Maybe
Same
he's better off
Gallman.
At 215.
Yeah.
Maybe he shouldn't be 225. Maybe he needs to be 215, and they just have to forego the thumper and use a different philosophy. And if that works, God bless him.
How about we split the difference at 220?
Okay.
Well,
I'll go get some steaks ready in the lunchroom.
Ajayi weighs 220, and look, he runs like a freaking like a man that's angry, like you stole something from him.
I hear you.
I think that's what they need to do is run angry.
You're in the Meadowlands. You're in the Meadowlands. Please tell me you're going to drop over and watch some of training camp.
I was going to ask you guys, when's the best time to come out and, you know, bring the kids and everything?
Last week of July. We don't have the first day officially announced yet, but the last week of July, at some point, they're going to open up training camp, and they're here almost for 3 weeks nonstop with only a couple of days off in between. And they're practicing right out here on the grass field in the parking lot. It's free admission. There's bleachers. There's a covering overhead, a canopy, so that, you know, you don't have to deal with the sun if you don't want to. And you can just enjoy watching these guys. And that's going to be the place where you're really going to start to get at least a feel. Now, they don't hit all the time. What I want you to do is keep watching Big Blue Kickoff Live, and I will try to give you advance notice as to what days are going to be in pads so that you can see some contact.
Yeah. I wanted to do it last summer, but work was just a little crazy, you know, last summer. But this summer, I'm going to take a day off for it. I don't care.
Try to do it.
Sick that day.
It's good stuff.
I hope to see you guys out there, too. You guys are out there?
I live out there. Are you kidding me?
I was going to say, Paul, you guys might kick me out of there, man, because I'm just as bad as you.
Have a good day, Nick.
All right, Nick.
I get too excited, you know?
Sounds good, Nick.
Take care.
Appreciate the call. The Giants will formally announce the days that are going to be open once they have the training camp schedule set, and it'll be up on Giants.com. So there will be plenty of days like there were last season. The only problem is that you have to anticipate, just a heads up, if it rains that day and you're planning to come out, they could very well move things indoors, and therefore there's no longer access. So, I mean, there's a lot of ifs that may come into play, but the Giants will certainly make that announcement as we get closer.
I wish we could start this week.
I can't wait
till training camp.
Yes.
I don't even want to go to mini camp. Let's go right to training camp.
Well, you got a little bit of time to just relax.
Who needs June and July? Hey, let's go right to training camp and start now.
Who needs training camp? Let's go to September. Let week one be
tomorrow.
No.
That?
Oh, so that you're okay with.
I need training camp to start making decisions on the roster.
Okay, so
I can't just go right to September.
I didn't know.
And I need to see those preseason snaps.
I got you. Okay. See, I thought you'd be jumping the gun to get to a week one game.
You're being so shallow.
No, I'm not being shallow. It's just I would take the week one game. You want a little bit of downtime. I'm just surprised to hear that. That's all. Just very surprised to hear that.
See those preseason snaps.
Well, I promise you will see plenty.
Thank you.
And then you'll have more than enough time to go from 90 to 53 in your head.
Yes,
sir. Because you don't have a 75 cut this year. So that's good to notice. All right, couple of things coming up here. 11 a.m. is the start time for Friday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live because it is open to the media tomorrow, OTA. So because of the schedule change, Big Blue Kickoff Live will start at 11 a.m. Eastern. We will back up and running at noon Eastern starting next week as we will continue to cover all the ups and downs of OTAs and then some to get you set for the start of training camp. With that being said, we appreciate Nathan Chin for joining us on the program.
Excellent.
It will be on the archive if you missed any of that interview. He was the special teams coordinator for Aldrick Rosas at Southern Oregon. For Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Meadow. We'll speak to you tomorrow right here on Giants.com.